Once a month, we join up with the Southern Oregon chapter of NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, to explore subjects and issues in mental health care. Andra Hollenbeck from NAMI Southern Oregon chooses topics and guests and joins the conversation. Andra, welcome back.
Good morning. Thanks.
Good to have you here. The topic this month is mental health care for young people. Mental illness does tend to show up early in life, and we have several guests to help us explore the issue. Barb Solish is with NAMI's National Office, the Director of Youth and Young Adult Initiatives. Barb, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And from our region, Sarah Hollingworth at Kairos, originally based in the Grants Pass area, Program Manager of Treatment Foster Care. Sarah, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And we also have Maren Steubenval at Charlie Health, the clinical outreach manager there. Thank you, Maren.
Thank you. Good morning.
Okay, a good crew here. Barb, let's start with you at NAMI National. To begin with, how important to focus mental health care on younger people?
It is such a vital issue to be talking about at all times, but especially right now. You know, the pandemic has taken a huge toll on the emotional health of our nation and especially on young people. And there's data to back that up. So in June of 2020, there was a CDC study that showed about 40% of U.S. adults were reporting at least one mental health or substance use concern. But what you may not know is that when it came to young adults, that number jumped to nearly 75%. So it's a huge number of folks we're looking at who have major concerns. We also saw at the beginning of the pandemic, you know, the spring of 2020, folks were on lockdown, and we actually saw adolescent suicide-related visits to the ERs decrease. But as the pandemic raged on, those attempts really went up. This is especially true for teenage girls, who showed a 50% increase in emergency room visits early in 2021 compared to that same period in 2019. So we're really seeing an increase of concerns, and there's no other way to say it. This is a crisis that can't be ignored.
And when we talk about young adults, what's the age range we're generally talking about here?
Yeah, so for that CDC study, that's, I believe it's 18 to 25-year-olds. But when we're looking down at adolescents, that's quite a bit younger, teenage years.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious to know if in the information pulled in by NAMI or anybody else, whether there is indication of how much online time is a contributing factor. I mean, when during the pandemic, people in high school were required to go to school online, in addition to that being the place where all the social media is, if that was a major part of the stress mix.
Yeah, it's hard to tell. We're really seeing a lot of mixed feelings from kids, especially coming back into in-person learning. You know, there was a variety of experiences from the last school year. You know, some may actually be quite happy to be back in school. They may have lacked privacy, or they had distractions they needed to get away from. Some may have been in truly unsafe conditions, and going back to school is a haven for them. But on the other hand, as you're mentioning, there are some kids who had real challenges focusing, you know, at the computer all day long. I think it's hard for adults to sit on Zooms all day. It's even harder for young folk to do that. And, you know, on the other hand, there were kids who really thrived on their own, and being thrown back in the classroom can be nerve-wracking and overwhelming. You know, some may have gotten attached to their family, have experiencing separation anxiety, not to mention those who finally felt free from bullying or racism they previously experienced on campus. So it's really important to listen and be responsive to each child's individual needs as we head back into in-person learning.
Let's talk to the two providers here about the kinds of things you do. Sarah Hollingworth at Kairos, Program Manager of Treatment Foster Care. Lay out, Kairos has been around since the 1980s, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. We've been serving this community for a long time. We have rebranded, but we have many programs across Oregon, multiple in the Rogue Valley area that are serving youth and families, for sure. Treatment Foster Care, we serve youth 4 to 17 years old, and basically we train and certify professional parents, essentially, our treatment foster parents, to provide intensive treatment services for these youth and young people with serious emotional and or behavioral challenges in a community home-based environment. So, you know, these folks with big hearts and a lot of love taking youth and young people to give them a family environment while they're working through these very specific mental health needs.
How extensive is the training for treatment foster care? I ask because as a former foster parent myself, I know that not the therapeutic kind was 15 to 18 hours of training. I can imagine it'd be a bit more for treatment foster care.
Yeah, good point. It definitely is. So our intensive training involves a minimum of 32 hours, and that's just the orientation. We do typically extends that to 40 hours for the majority of our foster parents with ongoing training requirements annually as well. So it is a commitment, and that is why we deem our foster parents to be professional parents. They have a lot more training and a lot more support. We provide 24-hour on-call support as well as daily supervision as well. And our treatment foster parents receive 48 hours of respite per month as well to get them that scheduled break from, you know, from the higher level of supervision and care that they're providing for our youth.
So let's move on to talk to Maren Steubenvall at Charlie Health and talk about where you are and the nub of what it is that you do.
Hi, yeah, so thank you for having me on. Kind of what we were just talking about before is the pandemic has really reshaped how not only people interact with technology, but how people have an increased need for mental health services. So essentially, Charlie Health is reimagining the mental health landscape, and with, you know, youth depression, anxiety, and suicide at an all-time high, we recognize that we need an innovative and accessible solution to address this crisis. So what we do is we offer fully virtual intensive outpatient therapy for people ages 11 to 30, so really trying to target that adolescent and young adult population. And we do this through highly specialized groups to build connection and promote healing. And, you know, I think especially now we're seeing a lot of virtual burnout. You know, we're all on school, we're all on Zoom, but when accessible care can only be accessed through a virtual platform, you know, we have to face these challenges head on and, you know, innovate a new way to make it engaging and effective for these high acuity patients.
Did you say 11 to 30 is the age range?
Yep. Mm-hmm. 11 to 30 year olds.
All right. Where do you have offices or is it available all over the place because of the fact that it is virtual?
Exactly. I mean, that's kind of where we started. We were founded right before the pandemic, actually in Bozeman, Montana, as a way to provide these high acuity mental health resources to the rural communities. But we've recently expanded out into Oregon. So we have our office in Eugene, but we can really target anybody in the entire state, which has been able to help alleviate wait lists at some in-person facilities. And really provide that smooth continuum of care when people, you know, need more than 1 hour a week of support but aren't quite, they don't need as much as like a residential treatment center or a hospital. So we're right in the middle there.
We are talking about mental health care for young people in this month's edition of our mental health segment in conjunction with NAMI Southern Oregon. Andra Hollenbeck from NAMI Southern Oregon joins us again. This time our guests are Maren Steubenvall at Charlie Health. You just heard from her. Sarah Hollingworth at Kairos and Barb Solis from the NAMI National Office, who's Director of Youth and Young Adult Initiatives. If you have questions for our guests on the Jefferson Exchange or stories to share, please join us at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Maren, I want to come back to you because you've used the term high acuity a couple of times, and I want to be clear on what that is.
Yeah, so that basically just means we serve people with higher needs than your average, like, one-time-per-week therapy goer. So we see clients who have, you know, extreme anxiety or a lot of depression or have a history of trauma, PTSD. So we focus on serving those clients who need more than one time per week therapy. And so what we're seeing is that there haven't been a lot of options for accessible solutions to that. We have a lot of one-on-one therapists around, but we need a virtual solution for those to, you know, participate in groups with people who are like them and participate in 9 hours of clinical work a week to really address those issues they've been feeling to help people heal.
9 hours a week, that's fairly intensive then, isn't it?
It is intensive. Mm. Yep, we are in intensive outpatient therapy.
Was there ever a vision at Charlie Health for an inpatient component?
Not right now. I mean, never say never, but we are, you know, we're really committed to this level of care because that's where we see a lot of the gaps, especially in our own communities. So we want to make sure that when people are discharging from inpatient facilities or hospitals, they have an accessible solution to go to, you know, so they can integrate back into their own communities, into their own home, while still having that support, you know, on their journey through their healing.
Sarah Hollingworth at Kairos, I mean, there is an in-person component, obviously, to the work that Kairos has done over the years. There is some inpatient care as well, isn't there?
We no longer have our residential care facility. We do have residential support for adults, multiple programs, actually, one in Grants Pass, one in Eugene, and one in Salem. But locally, treatment foster care is the closest to that, and it's actually very close to what Marin was describing as far as really trying to support folks at more of an outpatient level. Treatment foster care provides intensive services, like much higher frequency of services than your typical outpatient. And so that's the benefit to our level of care. It's that step up from traditional outpatient, that sort of once a week frequency that Marin was speaking to, but a step below residential where you're thinking of more of like a locked inpatient facility. So folks can really thrive in a home-based community environment while they're still receiving that higher level of care.
And how at Kairos did you handle the transition to virtual care? I mean, obviously foster parents have to be there in person, so that you couldn't do without. But what other things did you have to switch around because of the pandemic?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as everyone has already spoken to, the pandemic's taken a huge toll specifically on our youth and families, but also on our recruitment. We're recruiting now, and I think that's been the biggest impact, right? Is it's been a real struggle to recruit new foster homes and to maintain our existing staff. But we have been blessed to be able to continue to do a lot of in-person services, obviously following all of our, you know, state mandated guidelines to keep everybody safe. But we rolled with it. We did what we could. Some of our services did move to telehealth. But again, just due to the nature and the acuity of the youth that we serve, we felt like it was clinically recommended that we do maintain some in-person services throughout the pandemic. And that was challenging. It did take a toll on our staff. We've really stepped up our supports for our staff as far as appreciation and you know, focus on wellness. And, you know, we've been really trying to do the same for our foster parents, you know, pushing self-care, you know, having as much in-person contact as possible as we can safely do, and then providing the telehealth services, again, that makes the most sense so everyone's feeling connected and supported in their own individualized way.
Well, and being in their communities is a big component here. And Barb Solish, as we've talked about this, I was thinking about the idea over the decades of making sure that mental health is delivered in community and not away. You don't get sent away much anymore to state hospitals and the like. But it seems like this is particularly an acute issue with young people because they're still at home with their parents in most cases.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yes. And one of the great things about NAMI is that we offer, you know, many support groups. We also pivoted quite quickly at the beginning of the pandemic for both our support groups and our education courses. So, you know, for teachers who want to expand mental health education in their classrooms, some NAMIs across the country offer an evidence-based presentation called NAMI Ending the Silence, which is basically a mental health 101 for middle and high school students. And they also get to hear from a young adult who experienced a mental health condition in school. That has been shown to reduce stigma, increase knowledge, and increase help-seeking behavior. Local NAMIs are also always looking for new presenters. So if any listeners out there are interested, please definitely reach out to your local NAMIs. You can find that at NAMI.org/local.
Speaking of which, Andra Hollenbeck, I want to bring you into the conversation here because you have an overview of the Southern Oregon situation and of multiple providers. And I know we've had a couple of chats on the program lately about the severe lack, perceived lack of people able to deliver services, particularly where it relates to addiction. I mean, does that extend across other areas of concern in behavioral health?
Yes, it is for youth as well. And I think the services that are being offered both through Kairos and Charlie Health are really helping to address kind of that in-community need for transition between being in the hospital under intensive treatment and then being back in the community, because there's definitely a need for that transition. And then to support the families through that transition as well, because that can be really difficult when the youth is coming home and then the families are there basically being the providers for, you know, for the youth at home. And so NAMI is also offering the basics class for parents and caregivers, anyone who's a caregiver, and this goes for foster parents as well, anyone who wants to have a better understanding of mental health conditions in youth. We have a basics course, and we have one coming up starting October 17th. If anyone is interested, they should contact NAMI Southern Oregon.
I believe we're linked directly to you, but if we're not, I'll make sure that you are from our website.
Yeah, you probably are. Okay. But and I think Kairos has helped. They're kind of the central point of contact for youth, and I think that helps a lot with accessing services for youth in the community, they have workers in the schools, although there are different organizations that provide different services in the schools, and that can be somewhat confusing sometimes for parents and for teachers or anyone trying to seek services. And it's one thing I kind of appreciated about Charlie Health is that they try to be insurance blind. So many times in the schools or with families, what kind of service you can seek depends on what kind of insurance you have. And it can be confusing because when you're in crisis or when you're seeking help, it's difficult to know where to go, and you have so many other things going on in your head that trying to sort out that insurance piece can be really overwhelming.
All right, so good to make sure that they take care of that. I want to go back through our guests in the 4 minutes we have left and just talk about things to watch out for. I mean, if you think a young person is having some issues, what should you be looking for? Maren Steubenvoll?
Yeah, I think, I mean, one of the best tools we have is to really listen. I think, you know, as adults and we look to our young people, sometimes we think we know better, but really, you know, our kids know themselves the best. So, you know, when you ask them about their day and they have a weird sigh that follows, like, you know, maybe give them some space and really listen to see what they need. You know, always looking for changes in behavior. You know, if someone is sleeping a lot more or a lot less than usual or eating habits are changing, that's always something to be mindful of. And then always, I just really suggest to, like, ask questions. If you're worried about someone, a young person you know, just ask them how they're doing, and really try to normalize that it's okay and it's good and it's brave to talk about your mental health and how you're doing.
Sarah Hollingworth, how do you separate, though, the normal closed-mouthedness of some teens with adults, with their parents in particular? How do you separate that out from a situation that could indicate a greater concern?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think it all comes down to relationships. So sort of what Maren was speaking to, right, is just creating space and listening, having that relationship and trusting that the youth themselves, but the adults in their lives, they're going to know what that youth baseline looks like. And what I mean by baseline is sort of how they act day to day when they're in a fairly calm or regulated state versus if they're really struggling with something. If there's been some kind of change, they're going to be the ones that know what that looks like. And trusting that, you know, and being willing to ask questions. Again, just echoing what Maren said, right? being brave, being vulnerable, and modeling that as whether you're a professional or a community member or a teacher, you know, whoever the point of contact is, being willing to lean into that discomfort and sit with that youth, it can be invaluable.
Barbara Solish, it sounds like a lot of this comes down to know your kid, know them well enough to know when things are really not like they were.
Absolutely. And just to echo what the other folks said is that, you know, we're constantly modeling for the kids around us. You know, they're taking cues from us. If we want, if we want to see them taking care of themselves, we have to take care of ourselves. We also need to show that it's, as others have said, it's okay to not be okay. And we need to show how we're coping, too. And once you start that conversation, it really opens up them to feel safe enough to share with you. So really listening and being responsive to their needs, asking open-ended questions, I find is really important rather than something that could be a yes or no. I heard that or saw that you're not really talking to your friend. What happened? And that might open the conversation a little bit more.
Yeah, the whats, the whys, the hows are the ones that that give you the answers where people have to do more than just grunt. Indeed. Before we go, as we leave this segment, I want to make sure that we give the National Suicide Prevention Hotline out there once again, because we have mentioned this a lot, and we have talked a lot about in mental health issues on the program about not being afraid to talk to people about the fact that you are concerned about them. So it is 800-273-8255. We'll hear the music here to get the show over here. 800-273-8255. And that is the National Suicide Prevention Hotline. I want to thank our guests for joining us in our regular monthly segment. Andra Hollenbeck from NAMI Southern Oregon puts it together. Andra, thank you so much.
Yes, thanks for having us.
Barb Solish, National Director of Youth and Young Adult Initiatives at NAMI National. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Sarah Hollingworth at Kairos, Program Manager of Treatment Foster Care. Thank you.
Thank you so much for the opportunity, Jeff.
Sure bet. And Maren Steubenvoll at Charlie Health, Clinical Outreach Manager. Thank you again. Thank you all for joining us on The Exchange.